Thank you very much, Alice. That was fantastic. In terms of heritage listing ground segments for these things, so for still functioning satellites that may be obsolete, not just in orbit, but missions that have returned, like the ISEE-3 that swung past Earth, I think it was about 3 years ago now, and NASA had decommissioned all the hardware, and it was still functional, but they couldn't actually command it anymore because everything that they had used had been decommissioned and couldn't be rebuilt.
Yeah.
What's your view on heritage listing the ground side segments of these missions so that their functionality is preserved as well, not just their physical form?
That's a really interesting point. So using effectively what you're suggesting is using that process of heritage management to make sure that that ground infrastructure exists should in the future there be some possibility. Yeah, I think that's something that should definitely be considered. And we know there have been a couple of cases where people have reactivated satellites that were considered to be junk just because nobody was necessarily using them. It didn't mean there was anything wrong with them. It didn't mean they weren't functional. It didn't mean they didn't still have value. So, I think the other interesting thing in what you say is I've focused mainly on the stuff that's in orbit, but I also have a weakness for antennas and tracking stations, and I've done some research on places like Auroral Valley. And in fact, you know, these things are connected. Like those bits of space junk don't exist in isolation. They're connected into a whole web of things, including stuff on Earth. And just in 2014, I think, the International Society for the History and Heritage of Technology released a document called the Dublin Principles, which is about managing industrial heritage, and that's one of the things they emphasise, the fact there may be multiple sites and connections between things, and you have to look at it as that whole network of things. So I think that's a really interesting point, and in fact, yeah, you could use heritage, and there's that other use of heritage in terms of engineering heritage as well, like combine those two into something that assists in maintaining not just cultural value, but actual value of these things that we otherwise would call junk. So, yeah, I agree.
Hello, my name's Jan King. I think we've met before.
Hello, Jan.
And I am one of the Project Australis group. I happen to have been the fortunate one who was the last person on Earth to touch Australis Oscar V before it went into orbit. I have a slightly different perspective and point of view, but first the perspective. In addition to Australis Oscar V, I've put into orbit, and by the way, what I mean by put into orbit, I might have been the last one to be involved on the launch site with a spacecraft, but at least spacecraft where I either had a torque wrench or a soldering iron associated with touching the spacecraft, at least a dozen objects in orbit. So my perspective is, as an aerospace engineer who's done the dirty, I've actually been involved, I'm guilty. Three of those spacecraft, including one of them being Australis Oscar V, will be in orbit unless they're recovered for over 100,000 years. So that's 300,000 spacecraft years remaining before those are cleared from Earth orbit. So with that perspective, what I would say is while cultural value has merit, I think if we look at all of the aspiring engineers, and I was once one of the aspiring engineers that will be sitting in this audience here, I started this when I was 21 years old. So, yes, we have a burning interest and passion to get this stuff into orbit, but we are human beings, too, and unfortunately, we make a mess of just about everything we touch in terms of garbage and debris. We're just really great at entropy. We do increase entropy tremendously. So what my perspective would be is it would be great from the standpoint of all the spacecraft I've put up there or been associated with, certainly had lots of help from lots of other people. It'd be great to get one of those back and put it in a museum. But for the rest of them, I'm the guy who built them. I'm saying let's get rid of them and clean them out because we've got to make room for everybody else who follows. And quite frankly, we've created quite a mess up there. And there's a difference between the debris in orbit and the debris on the ground. And that is each of those pieces of debris could be approaching each other at something like 15,000 miles an hour. So 21 22,000 kilometers an hour. So that's worth thinking about. So that's about 7 to 8 kilometers a second each coming at each other. So 15 kilometers per second toward each other. So the worst debris situation that I can recall is a picture I saw, which was a view of the right-hand shuttle space window, which is made of quartz about 1.5 centimeters thick. And embedded in that was a huge flare destruction of that window that happened upon reentry. And what had happened is a tiny object had lodged in that window and almost completely destroyed it. Had it been destroyed, it would have killed all on board. When they analyzed what hit it, it was a tiny fleck of paint from a Delta launch vehicle. Mm. That's all it takes. So just keep those things in perspective when you're thinking about this problem. Thanks.
Absolutely. Like, there's no doubt something has to be done. But it can be done in a well-reasoned environmental management perspective that takes into account a range of other values. And it is, like, it's extraordinary when you look at, there's the speeds that are beyond imagining for us, really, aren't they? And yet that's the normal space environment out there. That's what happens. That's what these things do. And one of the other really interesting, this is also something where heritage information could be quite useful, because we're reliant on models of orbital debris to do things like working out when a collision is likely. And those models have the limitations of any kind of model. They're dependent on the underlying parameters, on the assumptions made, on the quality of the data. And something that people are starting to work on now is, you know, trying to model orbital debris beyond just looking at it as like a dot point or a sphere, and taking into account its density, what material it's made out of, its cross-sectional features, all that kind of stuff, to try and get more sophisticated models of what's actually going to happen. And sadly, when you do make those more sophisticated models, the scenario gets even scarier than it currently is. But doing things like researching materials and material preservation from this perspective could assist in contributing to refining some of these models and giving us maybe better outcomes in mitigation technology. I totally love Australis Oscar 5. And yes, Jan, I remember the reunion from a few years back. I'm so glad that you're here.
Hi, I'd take a counter view. I reckon that everything below 2,000 kilometres, particularly those in sun-synchronous orbit, if it's not actually functional, should be cleaned out when it becomes technically and economically feasible. As for bringing stuff back to Earth and putting it in a museum, you've got to pay for that upkeep of that museum. Already our museums have got full of things in the back storage room that are never on public display. I could name some things here in Australia, for example, which fit into that situation. And much of the stuff that's up there, particularly the historic stuff, there were backup models made, development environmental models made, and they could well be put into museums. In fact, some of them are. You go to the Air and Space Museum in Washington and you'll see the old satellites. So I think that the danger of debris is so great, particularly in low Earth orbit and sun-synchronous orbit, that when it becomes possible, we clear it out regardless of its historical significance. After all, the people who put it up there waved a goodbye and knew they'd never see it again.
Well, I think there's a couple of things to say about that. You're absolutely right about museums. We don't need more museums. We don't need more stuff in museums. And it's an easy solution to say, put it in a museum. But in fact, that involves cost, curation, all of that stuff. There have been proposals to make museums in orbit, which would be something. The second thing is, like, we're talking about 6% functioning satellites. Make that 8% and add in a few heritage things. Is that going to make a huge difference to the risks? Someone can do that work out the maths on that if they want to. So the point is, if you do it in a reasoned way, you can do it sensibly, and you can do it in a way to balance all of those risks and those requirements. Of course, in above a certain height, we're looking at natural mechanisms, if you want to call them, for stuff to be dragged back in. And some of the proposals for cleaning up debris are aimed at altering orbits of these bits of junk so that they will come back in sooner than they would otherwise. So, but obviously that's no longer sufficient. We're putting stuff and creating stuff up in that low Earth orbit thing quicker than it is being removed. But taking that into account, and also taking into account the fact, like in Australia, there has been a new propulsion or a new fuel developed that uses space junk to work. So there are ways in which the value of this stuff may change into the future, and that stuff has to be taken into account as well. So, like in large, I agree with you. We need to get rid of this stuff, but I think there is value in considering it as part of an overall environmental management strategy. And I think we can look... The point really is, let's not destroy stuff without even having asked the question. And that's my main thing here. Ask the question first. If you want to get rid of it, do it. But don't do it without having worked out who else might be affected by it and what we lose by doing that. And you might go through that whole process and say, nah, still not worth it, no problem. But at least you've documented the process and you've done it with some kind of reasoning. So I reckon we can combine both. I think we can satisfy everybody's needs and hopefully keep a little bit of heritage for future reference as well. Maybe it's probably a good time to break for lunch now.
I just wanted to ask, those accidents that were described before, when like a really small part does a lot of damage, do they happen often?
Sorry, I couldn't hear.
Those accidents that were described before, when a really small part does a lot of damage, do they happen very often?
Well, the example of the shuttle windows is an interesting one. Well, there's a couple of things here. Like, bombardment by those tiny bits is constant. And there are a number of ways of measuring how constant it is. And space shuttle windows are one of the most famous examples. There's also things like the Long Duration Exposure Facility, which was up in orbit for about 6 years, I think, and it had plates of different kinds of material. It was retrieved by a space shuttle, and the impact or the degree of damage caused by those constant impacts was analysed for a number of those materials. So that bombardment is constant, but the damage it causes is another thing. The thing about the space shuttle windows is that they cost some horrendous amount, each one costs some horrendous amount of money. So in terms of what the impacts of that kind of collision were, the costs back on Earth were extremely significant, and it meant it was definitely worth trying to think of ways that you might minimise those impacts. So I suppose you could say ultimately we don't have a huge amount of data on how often a tiny, tiny piece of stuff will actually be the cause of mission failure or component failure or something like that, and it would be worth getting more. But there certainly are a few examples of things. I mean, because some of this stuff depends on the return of the object, so you can actually assess what the cause is. And in other instances, it might be speculation. The thing about the little stuff is it's not tracked, so you don't know if that's the thing that caused, that might have caused the damage. So that's the one of the major problems with all of that little stuff. So people in the audience might have some other examples of like the whole space shuttle window thing. Like, we certainly know that constant bombardment impacts on materials. So reflectance studies of objects in orbit show that the older ones are more in the red, indicating that the surfaces are significantly roughened from when they were first launched. But, you know, whether that for these ones was not the cause of their ceasing to function, for example. That was the fuel or the battery running out or the mission life ending. But we know a little bit about the long-term effects of that constant bombardment.